Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I am Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, it is a crowded field in the race for the Democratic nomination for governor of Maryland, with eight people vying for the first state's top job. It can be tough to get your message out and heard. Well, this election season, WHUR has been the place for candidates to share with our listeners their position on the important issues of the day and how they plan to lead and serve. Tonight, we continue our conversations with the candidates. The phone lines are open. Also, we'd like you to give us a call. We want to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is Ashwani Jain. He is a candidate for the governorship of Maryland. Again, phone lines are open. If you have questions or comments for the candidate, now's the time. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Jain, thank you so much for being with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
So first, share with the listeners why you are running for governor of Maryland.
Absolutely. So my name is Ashwani Jain. I use he, him pronouns. I'm a 32-year-old cancer survivor, a son of immigrants and small business owners, and a product of Maryland public schools. I've worked in the public, private, and nonprofit sectors, including the Obama White House and two federal agencies. And I'm running for governor to make politics actually inclusive and actually accessible.
Now, tell us, what are the key issues that you believe are important in this campaign for governor?
I think it's a few things. When I'm talking to voters every single day and being the only governor candidate that spends all my time in a different county visiting voters at their homes, what I hear about is, number one, we need candidates and politicians who look at every issue in a comprehensive way. And number two, we actually want to know that the candidates are going to be held accountable once the election is over, so we're not just getting lip service. And so that's why we built the first-of-its-kind campaign, where we are entirely run by residents, where I don't take money from developers, businesses, PACs, or polluters, and we have such a detailed and comprehensive and fully paid-for policy agenda shared at janeforgovernor.com for the last year and a half.
Now, you are 32 years old, correct?
Yes, sir.
So you are the youngest candidate on the ballot, and you had mentioned just now that you're not taking any money from PACs, no money from corporations, no money from builders. You say, I believe, that most of your campaign is supported through crowdsourcing. Explain to the viewers, number one, what that is, or our listeners, what crowdsourcing is, and how not taking any money from these entities has affected your campaign.
Absolutely. So we are the first and only statewide campaign in America that is 100% crowdsourced. So what that means is we intentionally did not hire a single staff member. We have no consultants. Every single policy, every strategy, everything we have done on this campaign is actually built and created directly by residents from every age, every background in all 24 counties. So they get access to me. We get to work together on developing these policies and strategies so that those are actually equitable, inclusive, transparent, and actually can be accomplished. Now, in terms of my age, yes, I would be the nation's youngest governor, but I also have the experience and perspective needed in the governor's office to enforce policies in an equitable manner. Being someone who's a cancer survivor, a son of immigrants and small business owners, a product of Maryland public schools, and being someone who has worked in the private, public, and nonprofit sectors, even including the White House and two federal agencies, those are the things and perspectives that I think voters are looking for and voters find refreshing. And the way we're able to build such a large grassroots campaign, one of the largest in the state, without hosting fundraisers, without taking the typical money that every other candidate takes, is because we empower residents and make the time to meet them where they are. And so that's why voters are resonating with us so much as an underdog candidate, and they're proving to us that they don't care about the polling numbers and the fundraising numbers. They actually care about the policies and the way in which we're running our campaign.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Ashwani Jain, he's a candidate for governor of Maryland. Mr. Jane, you talked a little bit about your background, but you worked in the Obama administration, again, even at your young age, the Office of Presidential Personnel, a liaison for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Associate Director of External Affairs for the American CARE Act at the Department of Health and Human Services. So you've had a good amount of experience in a short amount of time. How do you think that will affect how you will govern?
Yeah, I mean, through those experiences, specifically, let's just talk about the Obama administration, I helped manage the political appointee process for the entire federal government, diversifying those pools. And that's what I would need to do as governor in my administration, find, recruit, appoint, and retain all the leaders to run all my agencies. I worked on healthcare at the U.S. Department of Health, which is obviously a pressing issue for so many Marylanders. I worked on housing at the U.S. Department of Housing, which is something that we constantly hear and see, that there's a lack of affordable and accessible housing throughout the state. And I also helped get the NIH and the FDA, both housed in Maryland, additional funding when I was then Vice President Biden, Director of Outreach for a healthcare program called the Cancer Moonshot. So understanding how to build coalitions, work across sectors, work at all levels of government, and manage these big programs and huge bureaucracies, those are the types of experiences that a governor needs to have. But again, doing so in a way that's equitable and actually inclusive.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Your questions or comments are welcome. Let's go to the phone lines now, and Valerie is calling from West Virginia. Go right ahead, Valerie.
Yes, thank you for having me. The candidate, your resume is very impressive, being that you're only 32 years old, but what is you passionate about that would make you stand out from the rest of the candidates to move Maryland forward?
Absolutely. And Valerie, thank you so much for that question. So I'm really passionate about focusing on specific issues in a comprehensive way. So that's why one of our signature programs is called the Maryland Now Plan. It's fully paid for, does not cut services, and it's going to do a couple things. It's going to eliminate the state income tax for 95% of Maryland workers, make public transit free and more available, create the nation's first guaranteed jobs program, legalize marijuana while expunging records, and impose anti-corruption measures that actually gets money out of politics. So all those issues are things that were made by residents who are going to be impacted by these decisions, are going to provide sustainable recovery, and allow folks to live better lives within Maryland and move to Maryland in a much more sustainable manner.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Now, Mr. Jane, if you're going to eliminate state income tax for 95% of the residents, then where is the revenue going to come from to fix the roads and do all of the things and all of the services that residents have come to expect?
Absolutely. I'm so proud to say that our team, unlike other campaigns, you can go to janeforgovernor.com and look at point by point exactly how this is going to be paid for. But if you'll allow me, I'll kind of go through some of the overall details.
Sure.
By eliminating the state income tax for 95% of Maryland workers, so that's anyone who makes less than $400,000, we're providing an average individual Marylander about $2,000 of extra disposable income a year. We're going to pay for it by making sure that people pay their fair share, so keeping those who make more than $400,000 continuing to pay the state income tax, allowing more combined reporting for large companies, making sure that out-of-state corporations who are doing business in Maryland actually pay their fair share in taxes on goods that are shipped into our state. So all that's going to generate a lot of revenue. We're also going to increase the fossil fuel fee on companies that emit fossil fuels and are damaging our environment, but we're not getting the revenues from it. We do that while transitioning to a cleaner energy economy. We're also going to make sure that we legalize marijuana and tax it as well. So those are some of the ways that this plan is fully paid for in the short term. And in the long term, it will also generate more economic activity from people being able to retire in our state and from people and businesses encouraged to move into our state.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ashwani Jane is our guest tonight. He is a candidate for governor of Maryland running in the Democratic primary, a very crowded primary. There are a total of eight that are currently on the ballot vying for that nomination. Let's go back to the phone lines, and let's go to Sheikah is calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, Sheikah, with your question or comment.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question for the young man. Hey, I'm 32 years old also. Also, I'm a child of immigrants. The question I have for you, sir, if you become the youngest governor of Maryland, how are you going to help African Americans to have a proper health care? Also, how are you going to help or force a law for African Americans to have an equity like buying a house? I went to Oxon Hill High School in Maryland, in Puget County. I'm a nurse. I'm doing very well. But the discrimination that I see in the healthcare towards African American, it's bad. Also, there's a bunch of young gay black people who are homeless. How are you going to tackle those problems if you become the youngest governor in the state of Maryland?
All right. Thank you so much, Sheikha. I think she gave you a couple of questions in there, Mr. Jane. I'll let you address the ones that you want to sort of pick off there.
Absolutely. And Sheikha, thank you so much for the question and for your work as a nurse. So I'll answer that a couple of things. Number one, because you mentioned you're a child of immigrants as well, I would strengthen our newly created Office of Immigrant Affairs at the statewide level to ensure that that office has proper funding to increase access to ESOL programs, workforce training programs, and also affordable housing, and also make sure that office can assist in investigating and acting on reports of discrimination and violence against immigrant populations. When it comes to healthcare and housing, those are two issues that are very related. We have detailed plans, but briefly, when it comes to healthcare, you know, making sure that we expand Medicaid eligibility, we create new health enterprise zones and community health clinics that we're investing in, making sure we have universal child care, that we actually have reproductive justice in our state, that we ease medical debt for those who are facing challenges in the healthcare market, making sure we're addressing food insecurity, and also treating opioid and drug use as a public health issue, not as a crime. So those are some of my healthcare policies. And then real briefly, in terms of my housing policies, again, this is fully detailed on my website, janeforgovernor.com, but making sure we actually have affordable, available, and sustainable housing. Talking about immediate relief so that no one is being evicted on during times of crisis, that we're expanding our MPDU zoning programs so we actually have affordability throughout the state based on where you live, making sure we have smart growth and mixed-use development, prohibit discrimination from landlords based on if you are trans, if you are a veteran, or if you are formerly incarcerated, and making sure that we don't allow developers or those who are in those special interests to drown out the voice of renters and homeowners in the campaign process, which goes back to getting money out of politics.
He is Ashwani Jain, candidate for the governorship of Maryland, running in the Democratic primary. He is our guest tonight as we continue our conversations with the candidates. We're going to take a break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone line, that's you, Michelle. Stay right there. We will get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Again, our guest is Ashwani Jain. He's running for governor of Maryland in the Democratic primary. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. And Michelle is calling from Largo. Go right ahead, Michelle, with your question or comment. Go right ahead, Michelle.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes. Good evening. I wanted to know, what is Mr. James' religious background?
Thank you so much, Michelle. So I am a Hindu. My parents are from India, and more specifically, I am a practicing Jain. Jainism is essentially a sect of Hinduism.
And why is that important to you, Michelle?
Because I believe only what you do for Christ will last.
Okay, thank you so much. And
You're welcome.
I appreciate your call. Mr. Jane, have you had to address that issue, your religious background? And if so, what's your sense of when that question is posed to you?
Yeah, I mean, most people have actually not asked that question. They focus more on, obviously, the specific policies on, you know, what I'm going to be doing as governor to help their immediate family or their day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when I hear that question, I hear it more of a, you know, what are your values? What are your morals? What is your guiding compass whenever you're making decisions? I do believe in the separation of church and state, and so I don't want to make sure – I want to make sure that my religion and no one else's religion actually impacts public policy, especially when it comes to, for example, reproductive justice, which is obviously a hot button issue right now. But, you know, for me, I am a person of faith. I'm very religious and also very spiritual. But that is one thing that helps, you know, allow me to remain calm and remain positive and understand that, you know, I am part of something bigger than myself. And I actually see politics as an extension of that, that if you're in it for the right reason, public service is truly meant to help the people in your community. And you do it not for yourself, but you do it for them and to better their lives.
Would you consider yourself a member of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party?
So I don't usually like terms like that because I think it alienates individuals. I consider myself, if you have to put a label, as a pragmatic progressive. But we have policies that are kind of around the entire spectrum of the Democratic Party. We have folks from the Bernie wing of the party to the Biden wing and the Obama wing of the party. And we even have some middle-of-the-road conservatives who have actually changed parties to be Democrats just to support and vote for this campaign. So if you look at specific policy details and the way we're campaigning about getting money out of politics and focusing on issues comprehensively, those are issues that are pretty universal, I have found. So I am a progressive. I'm a proud Democrat. But we do have, what I say, something for everybody, or almost everybody.
You propose enshrining abortion access into the state constitution in Maryland. How would you do that, and why do you believe that's needed?
Yeah, I'm proud to say that I was actually the very first candidate in the entire state of Maryland to release a specific reproductive justice platform a year and a half ago in January of 2021, even before Speaker Adrian Jones brought it up in our Maryland House. But it's a matter of access to health care. So when you make sure that you're enshrining abortion care, contraceptive coverage, and gender affirmation treatment within our state constitution, when we have comprehensive sex ed in all of our public health classes that teach everything from abstinence to contraceptives to gender identity to domestic violence, when you make sure you have free menstrual products in all public restrooms, just like toilet paper is free, so should that be. You know, all of those things are healthcare needs that are essential for the well-being of women and those who are non-binary individuals in our state who need the access, are going to get the access one way or the other, but we want to make sure they're doing it safely, that they're doing it in accordance to what is appropriately medical between them and their doctor, and that we're not discriminating against them with our state funds.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is Ashwani Jane. He is a candidate for governor of Maryland. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Rochelle is calling from Maryland. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Rochelle. Go right ahead.
I'm Plant from Alexandria, Virginia. And moving to the county, Prince George's County particularly, I am very concerned with the state of the public schools. And I just want to know from the candidate, what are your plans to address the issues with Prince George's County public schools that far reach it even to the school board?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for that question, Rochelle. So as a starting point, I'm a very proud product of Maryland public schools. I believe I'm one of only two of the current governor candidates that actually was a product of Maryland public schools. Also, you know, growing up, my grandfather, when he immigrated to this country, he found work as a high school custodian to provide for his family of seven and achieve his American dream. I attended a Title I elementary school in Montgomery County, which had mold on the ceilings, overcrowded with students, great educators who just didn't have the resources they needed. And when I was in middle school fighting cancer, it was the entire ecosystem of my school that provided me support. So those are the perspectives that I bring when I talk about a comprehensive education platform for students and educators in Prince George's County, as well as in every other county, making sure we have universal pre-K, that we're easing student debt for educators. We're diversifying our educator pool. We're making sure we have free public transit, so if you are a student, you can get to and from class efficiently. That we actually prioritize school funding and construction in lower income neighborhoods, in rural communities, and communities of color. Making sure we have affordable housing for educators. Making sure that we move away from standardized testing to more performance-based testing. That we require financial literacy credits for students to graduate high school. That we actually have more mental health professionals within our school systems. That we have student members of the boards of education that are actually allowed to vote in every county. And making sure that we have accountability when it comes to the budget. In 2007, many of us voted for slots, casinos, and we were promised that money would go to our public schools. But this current governor did not put that money in our public schools. We have the money, we had the money, but we did not have a governor who was held accountable to actually use the resources and money we already have and prioritize our public schools. And that's what I would do if I'm elected governor.
Thank you so much for your call, Rochelle. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight, we are talking with a candidate for governor of Maryland running in the Democratic primary. Ashwani Jane is our guest tonight. Phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Jane, you ran for an at-large seat on the Montgomery County Council in 2018. How did that campaign inform your run for higher office now for governor?
Absolutely. So in 2018, I ran for one of the four at-large county council seats in Montgomery County, which is where I'm from. It's a local race. My primary included 33 Democrats. It was a lot. I lost, but as the youngest in that race as well, I was able to beat 25 really great experienced candidates. And I also was the only candidate in the entire state of Maryland's primary at that time to get the endorsement of then Vice President Joe Biden. And so from that experience, I learned that if you really focus on policy details, if you try to expand the base and go into communities that are typically forgotten about, and you don't focus on just fundraising all the time and forcing residents an admission fee in order to hear you speak, that you can actually be really successful. And even though our efforts were not successful in that approach, we've expanded it to now building the first of its kind campaign that has never been run before in the United States from a statewide candidate. And so we're finding the success there. We're finding that we have the volunteers and the numbers to actually win this election, but not only win a primary, win a general election and govern more effectively in a way that we desperately need, especially in these times.
Well, in these times, it would seem that the reality is that you would need for folks to know who you are, right? And part of doing that beyond knocking on doors, I would think the quickest way to do that is through, you know, advertisement. And if you don't have the money, you can't get the advertisement. And I hear what you're saying about, you know, having a campaign where you're not taking from certain entities. But I would think you would even have to agree that makes your road a lot tougher if you're not getting matching campaigns and if you're not taking money from many of these entities that some of your competitors are. So talk a little bit about that, that it's an interesting path, but yet I would assume that there are also obstacles there by not having those funds to do the things you would like to do in your campaign, correct?
So I think traditionally the answer would be yes, but we have seen this time, right, you have candidates that have $4, $5, $6, $7 million, and yet a majority of Maryland voters, even right now, are undecided. So if polling actually mattered, if fundraising actually mattered, then those numbers would be much lower. You would have much more of the electorate right now actually being more decidingly in one person's campaign or camp or another. And so we're actually finding that people are gravitating toward us because we are actually speaking truth to what Democrats always talk about, which is getting money out of politics, but we're the only campaign to actually do it. And I think that's why, for me as an underdog candidate, we have over 750 active volunteers from all 24 counties. That is more than all the other candidates, And we're able to do that and empower these residents and volunteers to then get out the vote and talk to their neighbors, to canvas, to phone bank. And even if you look in the last 5 years, when underdog candidates win, it is because they take these approaches of a strong GOTV effort, a strong get out the vote, and speaking with voters and residents where they are, in addition to focusing on specific policies. One other thing I'll mention is, just myself, not including our team, I have personally knocked on already more than 32,000 doors across this state, which is more than any other statewide campaign or candidate has done. So we've proven that it actually works. The strategy is working. And when you're trying to expand the base and get new people registered to vote, or Democrats in rural communities or red counties to actually come out and vote, they're not going to show up in the polls. They're not going to show up to some of these events, but they're volunteering actively for us, making better policies and actually encouraging more people to get registered to vote and then come out to vote. So it is an effective strategy, even though on paper it is something that, you know, you may not think works. We've proven so far that it has, and there have been other candidates in the past who were underdogs, who kind of take a different kind of approach to get money out of politics, and they've proven that they can win without the polling or fundraising numbers.
And in general, when you're standing on that stoop in front of the doorway of that Maryland resident, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing a couple things. Number one, they have never had a candidate for governor actually come to their town or actually knock on their door unless it was for a photo op. So they're shocked. Then they tell me, okay, how do we actually hold you accountable? Like, how do we know you're not just giving us lip service? And that's when I go through, okay, you know, the fact that you are actually running my campaign and we actually are not beholden to any special interests in a way that no other governor candidate has done. And I'm the only governor candidate that's actually walking the walk and showing up in every single county and not forgetting about you. You know, that resonates a lot with them. And then other than that, it's a mix of issues, right? It goes everything from housing to healthcare to gun rights and gun safety to transit and transportation issues and education. You know, the typical issues that we always hear about and we're always concerned about. But it really starts with, hey, no one cares about us unless we have connections or a lot of money. And no one actually is held accountable once the election is over.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is Ashwani Jain. He is a candidate for governor in the state of Maryland. He is also a program director for the National Kidney Foundation. He is running in a crowded field looking for the Democratic nomination for governor of Maryland. He is looking to succeed the two-term governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, who was a Republican serving in a very blue state. So it would seem like Mr. Jain and the rest of candidates running for the Democratic nomination would have the advantage. But what we've seen lately in the state of Maryland is the Democrats don't really have a shoe-in for the top spot in Annapolis. So we're talking about the issues that are on the table in the state of Maryland. Mr. Jain will continue to answer our questions and take your phone calls, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is the Insight segment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment, a continuation of our conversations with the candidates. And tonight our guest is Ashwani Jain. He is a candidate for governor of Maryland running in the Democratic primary. Phone lines are still open. You can still get in a question or a comment for Mr. Jain, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Jain, you mentioned this very early in our conversation, and I want to go back to this. You are a cancer survivor. At the age of 13, you were diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. What has that experience taught you? How does it inform you as a politician?
Yeah, I mean, it really stems around this whole purpose of inclusion. I was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 13. You know, during that time, I did not think I would get to leave the four walls of that hospital room, and I had no control over my life. I was told when to wake up, when to sleep, what to eat, what medicines to take, I lost all my hair and all my confidence, and I felt depressed, I felt suicidal, and I felt helpless because it hurt to have other people make decisions for me instead of with me. And the ironic and unfortunate thing is so many Marylanders are feeling that way about politics right now. And so those values of inclusion, accessibility, making decisions with people, not for them, are things that I have dealt with on a personal level, and those are the things I'm trying to overcome and integrate into the campaign that I've built and run with our team and the policies that we've outlined.
Are you okay being excluded from debate forums that require that you, each candidate, raise a certain amount of money? I know that happened at Coppin State. I think the minimum was at least $500,000, and you were not able to participate in that. Are you okay with that?
You know, it's definitely frustrating. There have been several public, quote-unquote, public debates and forums that me and my team have been excluded from. Coppin State was one, but there have been a few others. And, you know, I think that's why voters and residents hate politics, because you hear candidates and politicians who say we want to get money out of politics, but then are still beholden to those same special interests and spend 90% of their time fundraising instead of spending 90% of their time talking to real people and going door to door as they should as public officials, which is what I do. That's why you have, you know, black and brown communities that feel like their lives don't matter. That's why you have young people that are often frustrated when they're told by elected officials that we want you to march, rally, protest, and canvass when it comes to getting them elected. But then when any one of us decide to take leadership on the issues that we are going to be held accountable for, we're told by those same people in the party that, oh, you're too young, wait your turn in line, and you have to, you know, go up the ladder and do it the quote-unquote right way. This is why people are frustrated with politics and politicians on both sides of the aisle. This is why turnout is historically low. This is why, especially in a very blue state, that Democrats do not get excited or empowered enough to vote in non-presidential elections. And on the other side, I think this is why our campaign is resonating with so many people. Why someone like me has so many volunteers from every county and so many policies that were made by residents. And it's actually, you know, showing up in all 24 counties, even those areas that are traditionally not, you know, good, so to speak, for Democrats. I think this is what people are seeing in the vision that I've outlined and the campaign that we have built. And this is the time that people are ready to make that change.
You've mentioned your youth. We've had a couple of callers specifically mention your age. I mentioned your age at the top. At 32, you fall, I believe, in the millennial category, correct?
Yes, and I would be the nation's first millennial governor in our history.
Now, there's a lot of conversation about millennials. On the one side, you hear, okay, they're very enthusiastic, they're very smart, they're very proactive, they're very thinking outside of the box. On the other side, it can be millennials tend to not think as critically as they should. Millennials tend to think they know more than they actually do. So you got a little bit of all of that. Does that ever really come up in terms of that sort of quote unquote millennial? Are you really ready to lead because you fall into that stereotype of that big M word?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. You know, number one, and we've been very mindful of the team, you know, we have 750 active volunteers, half are students, and then half are folks all the way up to 97 years old. So we actually are having a very broad coalition because of the efforts and policies we're speaking about. So there is, you know, building that bridge, which I think is really important between younger folks like me and those who are older, and kind of understanding how do we work together. That being said, you know, it is interesting that some folks always criticize younger folks in general that we don't have enough experience to lead on issues, even though it's been young people who have led the feminist movement, the labor movement, the climate movement, and even the Black Lives Matter movement. So young people are actually very in tune with what's going on right now, but it's actually being able to have a seat at the table. And in the same way that we need to give a seat at the table for folks who live in rural communities, for Black and brown communities, for those in the LGBTQ community, and the disabled community as well, you know, traditionally groups that have been pushed aside or told that they're not experienced enough, even though they are living with the policies, are impacted by these decisions, and need to be given a real genuine seat at the table to make solutions on those policies.
Gasoline prices are an issue across the country. We do see the numbers kind of going down a little bit here of late. Governor Hogan has, issued a gas tax holiday, but now has reinstated the gas tax. Do you have any specific plans on how you would deal with this issue of the gas prices, the problems, for lack of a better term, at the pump?
Yeah, I mean, right, we have to understand that a lot of times the inflation that we're seeing is because you have oil execs that are reaping profits at enormous amounts and failing to actually, have those go to people like us who are actually paying at the pump. So it's making sure that folks pay their fair share. In the short term, I've also been very vocally supportive of extending the gas tax holiday. We have a budget surplus. We have the money. And I think it is appropriate for us to extend the gas tax holiday so that in the short term, folks are not suffering as much. But then we also have to look at long-term economic sustainability solutions. And that's where I go back to my Maryland Now plan, making sure that more folks have access to increased disposable income and a reduced cost of living. So we're not just putting Band-Aids on these issues, but actually getting to the root causes and providing sustainable recovery.
You have a running mate by the name of Latrice Hawkins-Lights, and you had a caller call in and ask you specifically about Prince George's County and what you would sort of do with some issues in the county. She's a Prince George's County resident. Tell us about your running mate running for Lieutenant Governor, Ms. Lights.
Absolutely. I'm so proud that Latrice Hawkins-Lights is on our team. She is a healthcare advocate and a community activist. She's a juvenile type 1 diabetes survivor and a transplant recipient. She's also a proud product of Prince George's County Public Schools. And I picked her really because she and her family really represent what is best about Maryland. She's someone who works hard, gives back to her community, understands the challenges of our healthcare system and the importance of our public schools, and has and can elevate the voices of those who are really marginalized, forgotten about, or just overlooked in our political system. She's never been in elected office before, but she is representative of what most Marylanders are and go through. And that's a voice that is desperately needed, again, in our political system and especially in our state.
You are one of three candidates that have ties to the Obama administration. Tom Perez, former in the Obama administration, John King, formerly in the Obama administration, and yourself. Mr. Obama, the former president, hasn't verbally endorsed Tom Perez, but he shows up in Tom Perez's ads advocating for the attributes of Mr. Perez. So you can sort of get the inference that he is supporting him. Is that talk to me about that sort of aspect, that you have three candidates who are coming out of the Obama administration, and how important his endorsement, or at least him being part of Tom Perez's ads, mean? Would you like an endorsement from Mr. Obama?
Yeah, so, just to be very clear, President Obama has not endorsed anyone. He has appeared in Secretary Perez's ads. He's also appeared in Secretary John King's ads and information, and he's also on my website. So, anyone can use previous images and audio from President Obama that in no way means anything about recent times and the last year and a half, specifically as it relates to each of our governor campaigns. Obviously, I would be honored to have his endorsement, but he's been very clear that he does not get involved in primaries, at least in the state of Maryland. But I'm proud to say that in addition to the lessons I've learned working with him for 10 years in different capacities, that many of his members of his former administration and White House that I worked with are on our team as well. And it's really about, again, how do we use the lessons that we have built upon in the past and then make sure that we expand and make a process that is actually inclusive and accessible in a way that's never been done before. And that is kind of the focus, right? Marylanders, again, don't care about endorsements. They don't care about polling and fundraising numbers. If they did, then so many would not still be undecided, the day of early voting, which has started today. And so many of them would not be willing to volunteer on someone like me's campaign, who is an underdog, who is super young, and who's never been in elected office before. People are ready for change, and they're ready for specific policies and candidates who don't just give them lip service.
In our last few moments, you are looking to succeed, as I mentioned earlier, a two-term Republican governor in a state where Democrats hold a 2-to-1 edge. I'm not sure how you would define it, but the fact that he has won to serve two terms, I would say just in that sense, there is success there. Why has Larry Hogan been able to win two elections and be somewhat successful, or however you will term that, in a state that is dominated by Democrats?
Yeah, two terms is nothing to be shy about. That is successful, but he won both elections because Democrats did not come out and vote. They were not excited enough or empowered enough by our Democratic nominees to actually get out and vote. And another reason why he's quote-unquote successful is because he vetoes bills to fund public schools, to expand infrastructure, you know, to invest in the red line and everything else. And then you have a Democratic Senate and House that override his vetoes. And then he takes credit for it. So he knows how to play the political game very well. But when you talk about the actual issues, that's where Marylanders still feel like there is a gap that they need a candidate to fulfill. And that's where our campaign steps in.
He is Ashwani Jain. He is a candidate for governor for the state of Maryland. He is running in the Democratic primary. Candidate Jain, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for sharing your viewpoints on the issues pertinent to Maryland. And best of luck to you in your run for the state's top job.
Thank you so much for the time and the opportunity.
Well, that is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, July 7th. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.